Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Congressman Chris Gibson from New York's 19th District. First of all, Chris, as always, thanks so much for coming into the studio and being here with us.
Thank you, Alan. Good to be with you again.
Okay, so, look, you've served several tours in the Army. You know all about our foreign policy. You really are an expert who I have great respect for. So what do we do in Iraq and Syria and with ISIS?
Well, first of all, this threat, the Islamic State, I know this threat personally. You know, before they were the Islamic State, they were al-Qaeda in Iraq. They've now come forward, rebranded themselves, and you might say divorced themselves from al-Qaeda. But this enemy, just to give you an illustration of the way they operate, we had a day in Mosul, which is in Nineveh province in northern Iraq, where they executed at point-blank range, about a half dozen Iraqis who were working with us to improve the local economy. And when al-Qaeda found out about that, they rounded them up and they shot them in the temple with a pistol. And shortly after that happened, when I got the report, I moved to that location. And what I observed there that day, I will never forget. You know, I was 40 at the time, and I grew up Catholic. I certainly could pass a test about what evil is intellectually. But on that day, I felt like I saw the devil's work on earth. So this is an evil enemy that has to be defeated. They're not going to be contained. But the question is how? What's the smart way to do that? And so I have some decided views on that, and I'm glad you're asking because I want to share. First of all, the first thing is that were I the commander-in-chief, or what I'd like to see the president do is to say that we're going to keep folks safe. I know that there's some anxiety out there. People are concerned about this threat. We're going to take action to make sure they're safe. You did hear the president say that at this point, the Islamic State has expressed a desire to attack us. But from all indications from the intelligence community, we don't assess that they have that capability to attack us now. So with that being said, then, I recur to the question, what's the smart way to deal with this threat? So I have 3 points. The first point is that we should be working with the Iraqi armed forces and the Kurdish forces to defeat the Islamic State in Iraq. This is a unit that we have for about a decade. We've been extensively involved with them. We've spent hundreds of billions of dollars in preparation to help them secure themselves. And when I mention this, people will say, well, wait a minute, didn't they run in Mosul? What's that all about? They did. And the reason is very simple. They weren't willing to die for that prime minister, Prime Minister Maliki, and the Iraqi government. That government and that leader was perceived as being not only corrupt, but being vicious towards Sunnis and disregarding of the rule of law. And they just simply weren't going to lay their life down for that. And so when the Islamic State started moving across the desert towards Mosul, they took their uniform off and they ran. Now, you notice when the Islamic State started moving towards Baghdad, the Shia, the predominantly Shia areas, they were stopped. Now, what's happened since that time is there's been an election on the 30th of April. There's been a new government formed. There's a couple positions we're still waiting on, and they're important ones. But the new government's been formed. It's more inclusive. Prime Minister Maliki has been shown the door, and there's real hope of nationalism and unity in Iraq. And that's so important to this. Let me give you a sense of scale here. The total number of Islamic State fighters, less than 10,000. The total number of Iraqis in uniform, when you count the army, what we would call the National Guard and the police, is just under 1 million. Yep. So clearly they have the scale to do this. The question is, do they have the motivation to do this? And then do they have the armaments and the munitions? Now, that's where we can play a decisive role. You take, for example, their Air Force. They have both rotary wing, or you might call helicopter attack helicopters, and fixed wing, the fast movers. That would be like your fighters. But they're short munitions, like their attack aviation was short missiles, Hellfire missiles. We provided them. I think that's very appropriate. And I believe ultimately they will be able to defeat the Islamic State there in Iraq. And why is it then, in my view, why is it important to do it that way? Here's why. You know, our this enemy, the Islamic State, they are attempting to frame this struggle as a struggle between who they describe as the believers versus the non-believers. There's an element in this that ascribes to that. There's no question on that. But really what's going on more fundamentally is this is extremism that's trying to cloak itself in the form of Islam. And the biggest damage they're doing right now is to mainstream Muslims. And to the extent that we are able to help the mainstream Muslims defeat these extremists, two things happen. One is we neutralize their military capability. And the second thing is, and this is at least as important, we lessen their ability to recruit and to fundraise globally. Because make no mistake about it, what's going on right now is they're agents of the Islamic State, and they're in competition with Al-Qaeda. They're going into every madrasa around the world, and they're asking, what are you doing? And, you know, I'm sure the leadership of the madrasa says, well, you know, we're teaching them this, we're doing this, Wahhabism. And the Islamic State says, you're not doing anything. We're over there fighting the great Satan right now. Why aren't you sending your fighters over to be with us? And by the way, have you written a check yet? That's what's going on. So to the extent that we can empower the Iraqi armed forces and the Kurds to defeat this extremist threat, we not only neutralize their military capability, but we lessen their ability to expand, which is really our concern at the moment for the United States. We lessen their ability to recruit and to fundraise. You'll notice that even in recent weeks, the Iraqi armed forces and the Kurds, with our assistance, have rolled back the Islamic State in many of the areas. So that's point number one. Point two is Syria, because we need to take action with regard to Syria. But I don't support the escalation that's going on right now. I don't think we've set the conditions. There's no political foundation for this escalation. On these rebels, these so-called moderate rebels, we ascribe the term Free Syrian Army on them. There really is no Free Syrian Army. This is a league of disparate rebel forces, of which there are generally considered two major leaders. But even that, even those two have not come together in harmony. So when you listen carefully to the administration, they say that one of the things they're working on is a chain of command. What they're really saying is they're trying to unify this quote-unquote moderate rebel faction. I find them to be militarily incompetent and politically untrustworthy.
Yeah, the untrustworthy is the one that gets me.
And it's documented. So, you know, and then the other piece of this is if you think of what was the big idea. The big idea here is we needed to train and equip these rebels because otherwise the bombing wouldn't work. That was the big idea here. But what the point I made to the administration is that you undermine your big idea with your course of action, because they say they need these moderate rebels or else the bombing campaign won't work. Yet they started the bombing campaign and we're not expected to have any rebels trained for 8 to 12 months. So I have, just from my military experience, I have fundamental issues with this approach. And even from my time 3.5 years in the Congress now, I have serious reservations about the strategic impact. So if that's the case, then what do you do? Because it's undeniable that the Islamic State has a presence in Syria and it's destabilizing and potentially threatening to us. Well, I maintain the same place I was a year ago. And that is, we should be working with our friends and allies to pressure the government of Syria to compel Assad to depart. And I think there are ways that we can do that. We can freeze his assets abroad. And when he asks for us to unfreeze it, we can unfreeze it and give him a portion of it. And he has to go. Just like Aristide, if you think about what Haiti was like in 1994. And then we should be working with the remnants of the government of Syria to work with whatever rebel forces we think that can be rehabilitated to get some kind of political foundation from which we could take decisive action in Syria, supporting that political foundation. So that would be point two. And point three is, it's just common sense, given the fact that our enemy here, the Islamic State, has threatened us, is to take more action to secure our borders. And I think when we do that, that not only will help our security and confidence for Americans, I think it'll set the conditions for fixing our broken immigration system going forward. So, you know, look, and then there would be a larger point, I know we're short on time, but then the fourth point is restoring peace through strength. And that's a more longer-term project.
And when we come back the next time, we'll start with that one, okay?
Thank you.
Well, Chris Gibson, always great to hear you speak. You know, you sound like you really know what you're talking about, and I really appreciate that because there's an awful lot of stuff that I don't really understand here. But thanks again for being with us.
Thank you, Alan.